Last week on Leading Outward.
The essential quality of a human being is what happens between them, the connections that are between people. People don't exist in isolation.
That's Nate Mitchell, and last week we heard the first half of this discussion with Arbinger clients and facilitators at our summit in 2022.
We've got this problem of hidden pain. I didn't bring any shocking statistics because you already know them, of the terrible, catastrophic cost of this isolation that's coming from radical individualism.
So today we're picking up with the second half of this discussion, where we'll hear the experiences of the people in the room as the group processes and unravels together the individualistic lie that we exist apart from each other. Welcome to Leading Outward, the Arbinger Institute's podcast, where we explore the tools and ideas we've used for over 45 years to help people solve their toughest leadership and organizational challenges by leading with an outward mindset, seeing people as people. I'm McKinley Otterson.
There's a big question that comes up quite a lot about what's the proper way for me to regard myself within that we.
This idea of we is at the core of Arbinger's work and is explained so clearly in the last episode. This episode harkens back to many of the ideas explored there. So, if you haven't listened to that episode, pause this one, go back, and start there.
One of the things that we teach all the time, you count like I count. Do we really believe that? Do we really regard ourselves as someone else that we have responsibility for? Would we allow someone else to pay attention to their own feelings? Would we think that it's a terrible idea for them to share that with us? Some of the things that we do to eliminate our pain make it worse. Some of the things actually make it better. Sometimes we ignore it. Sometimes we distract ourselves. We do a lot of things to avoid or eliminate pain. We hide it from other people. Is that going to strengthen we? We've got this problem of hidden pain. How do you know when it's time to disclose it or share it or connect? What's been your experience? Comment.
Thanks, Nate. I had the fortune of facilitating for Arbinger for a number of years now, and last year I was headed out of town for a workshop, and my 14-year-old was having a side conversation with my wife, and I could tell he was a little bit, I don't know, he just seemed a little out of sorts, and she said, he wants to tell you something. He's my especially honest boy. He can't hold anything in. He says, Dad, I just had to tell you this, that I like it when you're here, but I like it a lot when you're gone. Now, I'm about to go facilitate this material. I remember heading to this location, and the first half of the day, I felt like a fraud. Here I am projecting this image and performing, teaching this material, and I felt like a total fraud. I felt very lonely in a room of individuals. And I'm not suggesting that necessarily airing your laundry per se is the solution, but in that moment, I felt like I needed to share what had occurred. And where this principle that you're sharing, what's helping me to see is how I was able to get out of that funk. I could feel an immediate connection to people in the room that fundamentally changed how I felt about myself, and that I was okay to continue forward to share the material, even though I wasn't always living it perfectly. And a father approaching me afterwards and saying, hey, thanks for sharing that. I don't know that I could quite appreciate this stuff until you shared that example, and I'm now seeing some things that I can be doing differently.
That's amazing. And what a gift. When we're not seeing things as they truly are, we start to believe this lie that holding on to that is the gift that I'm giving for the sake of this group, I'm going to go ahead and act out the part of the facilitator. What a gift to be the first one to say, hey, I don't have it. We have a tendency to withdraw ourselves from we, thinking that I as an individual am so broken that I have to remove myself from the body to get fixed, and then maybe I can be worthy to be remembered. I dismember myself, and then maybe I can be remembered into that body. I take myself away from the very medicine that I need. It's going to mean that we connect through our limitations. Being complete or perfect or enough is not a condition for being part of the body. We become obsessed with that question, am I enough? I ask myself that question, am I enough, so that I can relieve myself or excuse myself from that feeling of emptiness of not belonging. Am I enough? Have I tried enough? Have I done enough? Well, what if you discovered that as an individual, no, I'm not enough, but we are enough. We are enough.
I don't know if anyone else has had this thought, but you asked earlier a question, how do you know if you've successfully hidden your pain or that you're successfully hiding your pain? And as I was thinking about that, my answer, my self-answer was, you're lonely. How do you know that you're successfully hiding your pain? You're lonely. And I don't know if anybody else needs to hear that, but I think I needed to hear that myself, because it's giving me pause to think about all the ways that I'm disconnecting or isolating from, you know, the different bodies in my life that I could be a member of.
We have to be able to say, I am lonely and I don't know what to do about it. That's why if I go through that filter of thinking, no, I'm not going to make that phone call because what are they going to do? How are they going to fix it? They can't solve this problem. Pay attention to that sense, just to connect, just to be able to say, I don't know what to do. And if you're on the other side of that phone call, don't feel like you have to fix it. Just be there. Be there in all of your limitation. Be there in all of your frailty, all of your brokenness. Just show up. Thanks for sharing that. There's another hand over here.
I don't fully know how this is going to come out, but I was visiting family of mine in California. It was my dad's 50th college reunion. I wanted to go with him, and I was secretly hoping all of his other college friends would bring their single sons, but that didn't happen. So it was me and my dad's friends, and my sister and her husband were there as well. And our last night, we were all having sushi together in downtown Santa Barbara at this amazing sushi restaurant, and we were just having the best time. And all of a sudden, my brother-in-law, whom I love dearly, starts telling me how next year he's taking my sister to Italy on this amazing trip. And all of a sudden, I felt just envy. Like, where did this even come from? I made a joke like, waiter, can I have another drink, please? You know, I kind of laughed it off. But inside, I was so envious. I want to go on adventures like that. I take care of myself. I'm a big girl, but sometimes you want someone who can take care of you. I was talking to a woman who's helped me a lot, who's involved with Arbinger, about that experience, because I was just so envious, and then I was mad at myself for being envious and felt guilty. She helped me to see that I didn't acknowledge my pain. I went from jealousy and then anger at myself for being jealous, and she helped me to see, Betsy, that moment was a gift because it's showing you the depth of your longing for that. I have to be willing to see, when am I in pain? if we're going to connect with others on our pain, we have to be willing to name it for ourselves and not just escape from it. I think we can lose ourselves in work or busyness or going out for a drink with the girls or whatever it is. To share it with another, I have to be able to put my hand over my heart and say, I'm sad. I long for something that I don't have right now.
That's part of unbecoming the person that we never were, is that narrative that we somehow uptake that good people don't feel jealousy. I'm a good person. That jealous feeling that came up, no. Good people don't get sad. Good people don't feel those things. They do. People with healthy relationships do feel those things. And they wrestle with them. That's where that friction comes from. Right? Without that friction, we'll never gain access to that spark, that light, that source.
She said, I hope someday you can tell your sister and brother-in-law that story. I still haven't. They have no idea. She said, I hope sometime you can invite them into that pain. That thought hadn't even occurred to me.
I had been at Arbinger for just a few months when we hosted this summit, and I remember meeting a Betsy. I wasn't sure if the Betsy I met was a Betsy that shared in the session, but I reached out to her, now 3 years later, to find out. And when she confirmed that it was her, I asked if we could get on a call. Betsy, I'm assuming, like, you remember the story that you told in this breakout session.
I do.
One of the things you said is, as you were working through this with a friend, she had asked if you had told your brother-in-law and sister how you were feeling. And you're like, that thought had never occurred to me. Have you told them?
I actually have not. But now that this is out there in the world, I am closer now to the place where I believe I can have that conversation. I did not feel ready to have that up until more recently. So I haven't talked to them, but this might be a great time to potentially have that conversation.
I'm curious why it has felt like you couldn't share that with them.
No reason in particular, just I don't know. And I think that's a good question.
In this moment, I felt that if Betsy is anything like me, she probably does actually know, but admitting it and sharing it feels really hard. So I wanted to just wait and give her some space.
The things that we struggle with kind of ebb and flow in our lives, and sometimes we get to a place where we're not struggling with that, and then it comes back. And, you know, that is still an unmet desire in my life to find my partner to go to Italy with one day, and I still can have recurring, I don't know what to call them exactly, episodes sounds a little dramatic, but we can still have recurring times that we still struggle with something that is unmet in our life. And so that might be a reason why it didn't quite feel healed enough to have that conversation, if that makes sense.
It's interesting, Betsy, because actually, as I have been working on editing this session, your story stood out to me most because while I'm younger than you, this is also my story. It's also an unmet desire that I have and something that I long for. All of my close friends are married, and many of them have children, you know, and so there's just like the constant reminder of this thing that I care about that I don't have.
Thank you for sharing that with me. One of the most important lessons I took out of acknowledging my envy was what's underneath that, you know, and it is so important to acknowledge to ourselves and to others. There's a lot of connection in that, and there's a lot of fulfillment in that, you know, when we do feel comfortable to do so.
When Betsy said, when we feel comfortable to do so, I was just thinking about the times in my life when the connection I've created with others was only possible because I shared what was uncomfortable. Had I waited until the pain had passed, I would have missed the opportunity to connect with that person. Sharing the pain while I was in the pain was precisely the conduit for that connection. And so I wondered if there might be some other experience in Betsy's life where she had also experienced this.
I think the one that comes to mind right now, because of the season that I'm in, is I'm really going through the pain of a career chapter of mine coming to a close.
Yeah.
And how lost and alone I felt leaving really what was a home for me professionally for 13 years. It totally rocked me. And even though I made the decision to leave, I felt really lonely. It's so hard to reach out to people when you're in that place. There was an executive at the company that I used to work for who had posted something on her LinkedIn profile that she had left the company to start her own business, and she had never known if she'd be able to fill the void of being on a team, and it was so hard for her to work through that. I liked her post. That's all I did. I liked it. You know, that's it. And then she reached out to me and said, "Hey, I actually noticed on your profile that you're actually not at the company anymore. How are you doing?" And we ended up meeting up for coffee and just having an honest conversation about what it feels like to be lost professionally. It was just so meaningful. And it was in a season of real difficulty. People who are also going through it, I think those are the times when it has been easier for me to do the initiative, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for me to like call up my friend who has everything I'm looking for to say, "I'm in pain right now." Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes, I know.
It's
yes.
A little bit easier when you can sense someone is walking your path or dealing with that same pain. But here's the thing, as I'm saying this out loud and processing it, we might look at other people and say, "Oh, well, they have this." But the reality is we don't know what their path was. And by the way, they still struggle. Like they have other yes. things. Just because they have yeah. this thing doesn't mean they don't have other areas of struggle.
When I was talking with Betsy, I totally agreed with her. Because, yeah, it really does feel easier to share our pain with people who are going through something similar. But as I've thought more about it, and about what Nate has said, I've realized that it only feels safer when the underlying assumption is that people who aren't feeling our pain aren't feeling any pain. But of course they are. And when we hold back our pain, we miss the chance to connect with them and to discover their pain too. For Betsy though, it's even harder. She's not just struggling to share her pain with people who she thinks can't relate, she's struggling to share it with the very people who have what she longs for most and whose situation unintentionally makes her feel her pain more acutely.
This is also just me being a little bit more honest than I was maybe at the beginning, but you know, when you asked why haven't I talked to them? Like the honest answer is I still deal with those feelings. Like I still deal with the feelings of envy or jealousy, and not all the time, but this conversation is challenging me to consider that even though I still struggle with those things, and even though I'm not in the place I want to be, maybe that's what the courageous part of having a conversation is. And I would want to be in the right mind space for it. You know, how do you tell someone, "Hi, I'm jealous of you"? You know, like there's probably a way to have this conversation, but I think you're challenging me to consider what could it look like. So you've given me some things to think about.
I'm just curious, Betsy, because at least in this session, you say, "My brother-in-law, who I adore." If you were to have this conversation with your sister and brother-in-law, how do you think they would respond?
You know, that's the thing, because I think they'd be incredibly loving and gracious. I know they would be. So I'm the one making it hard. I know they would respond with a lot of love and hugs, and because that's how they are. That's who they are, and I know that's how they would respond. And so the question is, if I know they would respond that way, then why is it that I still can't, or still tell myself I can't have that conversation.
I think that's the relationship they want with you, is one where you can tell them that you're hurting, even when they're a manifestation of that hurt, you know?
Yeah, they absolutely want that kind of relationship with me. Even my sister wrote a book called Call a Spade a Spade. Like, just be honest. I'm just, let's not pretend anymore. That was a lot of our growing up life story in a way, is let's just be real and not try to pretend. So I know that's the kind of relationship that they would want.
I'm also just thinking, based on my own experiences, they know.
Yeah.
If they're the thoughtful, loving, caring people that they seem to be by how you talk about them, of course they've thought about what your experience must be like.
Yeah.
As you're talking, Betsy, I'm so grateful that you're willing to be so real with me. I'm thinking of my very best friend. It will have been 2 years that she got married. And she was my last close friend that got married. And so I thought it would be the easiest one because I've been a bridesmaid so many times. And I thought it would be the easiest of the marriages. But it was by far the hardest. It rocked me. It totally rocked me. I was in a really dark place. One of my gifts is being happy for people. And I was happy for her. But it also was like so extraordinarily painful. So I just stopped talking to her. I still would talk to her to like plan the things that I was hosting for her. And when I talked to her, like, it would always just be like super happy, enthusiastic, and kindly. And I would often end in crying. Like, it was interesting because there was even a couple times that she's like, hey, McKinley, I just want to like check in. How are you? Like, I feel like I haven't really heard how you are lately. And I'm just like, oh, great. You know, like, we just brush past it. And this was for months. In my mind, this friendship was dying. She's going to get married and then I'm not going to ever talk to her again. And that was like an extra pain on top of the pain.
Yeah.
I feel like I was losing a friend, my best friend. I didn't want to tell her and I was terrified to tell her and I felt embarrassed. Finally, I was just like, well, I'm either going to lose her or I'm going to lose her. So like, I might as well like tell her. And I told her, I was like, Linz, I am struggling so much. I'm so sad. I didn't think I would be sad. Like, I thought I'd be fine. And I love your fiance, but I'm really suffering. This is really hard. I didn't tell you because I didn't want you to think that I'm not happy for you or that you can't express excitement to me. I still want you to be able to tell me things that you're excited about, just like you want your brother-in-law to tell you about Italy. Like, you wouldn't want to not hear about that. And she was just like, McKinley, I know. And I've also been feeling really sad because I know you and I know that you've distanced yourself. I've wanted to be connected with you. And I have been feeling like I'm losing a friend. And that is sad. I don't want to lose this friend. We were able to have this conversation and we just cried together. And then we could be friends again. Because it wasn't this thing I was trying to hide from her and she's trying to be a friend, but I'm not allowing her to be. I just remember how hard it felt to actually share with her this thing that I want, that you have, that I don't want you to think I'm not happy that you have. But I also want that, and that's hard. But what was harder was not sharing it. Now we both can just be in relationship with each other. Your brother-in-law and sister sound like Linz. They just sound like true friends. And I think that they'd probably be really grateful. It would probably invite a degree of closeness between the three of you that would be really meaningful to all of you.
Yeah, I agree. I love your story. Thank you for telling it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people need to hear that because our relationships are literally the most important things in our lives. And to let a fracture compound, we don't know what life's going to bring for us, the other person, if they're going to be here next week. Stepping into that vulnerable, courageous place is so important.
Thanks, Betsy. It's interesting. That would be so the exact opposite of what we're talking about in this episode if I didn't also share my story. Oh yeah, Betsy, you can bear your heart to the world and I'll just keep mine protected.
As I told Betsy, I didn't plan to share my story with her. I didn't even really know Betsy before this conversation, but being with her, hearing her share her pain, invited me to connect with her in a way I didn't anticipate. That is the beauty of what people like Betsy do for us. They invite us to move past the discomfort and connect through our pain, to create the connection that all of us crave. And that's what Betsy is choosing to do with her sister and brother-in-law. Here's her message just a few days after our conversation.
Hey, McKinley. After we talked, even though I haven't had a formal sit-down conversation with my sister and brother-in-law, I did decide to reach out to them and ask if I can spend Christmas with them. It's an invitation that they had extended earlier this year. They had said, "We hope you know that you're always welcome to come and be with us." And as the holidays are now approaching, I've been starting to think about my holiday plans. And it just occurred to me after we talked that this might be the right next move. And I'm really excited about it, actually. And beyond that, more will be revealed.
From the way Betsy said this, it sounds like spending the holidays with her sister and brother-in-law isn't something she would normally do, which, of course, makes a ton of sense. Even though she's close to them, being with them would be a constant reminder of the painful difference between their reality and hers. And yet Betsy is choosing to connect through that pain because she wants that kind of relationship with them. When I've made that same decision to connect through the pain, it doesn't make the pain disappear. Our realities can and often are painful, but it does lessen and sometimes even eliminates the pain of loneliness because I'm no longer afraid of people finding out what I'm carrying. And it's in that honesty that I actually gain someone who can help me carry it. And if we're lucky, we might even be invited to carry some of their pain too. And that, being with each other in this sincere, reciprocal human way, is what it means to be part of we.
Gifts that come to us indirectly. Those of us who are figuratively standing in that circle, clasping hands. The thing that I need will usually come through someone else and be passed along hand to hand until that medicine reaches me. It's that passing along that strengthens that hoop. The whole idea of we is one rule. Don't be the one to weaken the hoop. Is this move going to strengthen that hoop? Is that going to strengthen we? The tendency that we have to isolate is learned. The tendency that we have to be together is not learned. You're born that way. The process of joining lives and living seems to me a kind of a process of unbecoming who you never were.
Our humanity lives in the space between us. Who we are is who we are together. And when we recognize that truth, even pain becomes an invitation to connect, to heal, and to lead differently. Leading Outward is produced by the Arbinger Institute. To have a conversation about how we can equip you to transform your leaders and organization, schedule a complimentary strategy session at arbinger.com. And whatever came to mind for you while you were listening, a conversation you've been putting off, or feedback that needs to be shared, action that you need to take, don't wait. Take that action, because that's how change starts.